Guys, welcome back. This is Rose 420. If my sound quality isn't shitty anymore, it's because my amazing fiance surprised me with a new microphone. Since we are up to 2K listeners, I figured I should up the equipment. He surprised me with this. He's amazing. Anyways, so tonight we'll be diving into the OJ Simpson case. Now, depending on what decade you're from, you could know him as the Juice, a murderer, or Khloe Kardashian's possible and yet unconfirmed father, which they bring up a lot and it's weird. So we're getting into the murder of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman, who unfortunately lost their lives. Now, before we get into this case, I want to make an aside. I am a huge supporter of the Black Lives Matter movement. I say that because when the O.J. Simpson case happened, Rodney King, an unfortunate black man, had just gotten the absolute crap beaten out of him by the police. It was video recorded and America saw it. It led to the LA riots, and it led to a lot of divide in this case back in the day, and I actually remember that between the black community and the white community on whether OJ was just on trial because he was black. I do not believe racism played a part in this. I think he was guilty, but I want to say that what happened to Rodney King was completely unacceptable. The LA riots were necessary, and these things are still happening, and so I support Black Lives Matter, but OJ Simpson, I believe, is guilty. So, now that we got all that out of the way, go grab whatever you're going to smoke out of, and let's dive into this case. Welcome back, everyone, and thanks for joining me again tonight. I missed you guys. So tonight, like I said, we're going to do the O.J. Simpson trial, part one. This is going to be multiple parts. I'm not sure how many yet, but it will be multiple parts because it is not a short story, and it is not an easy one either. So before we jump into that, let's get into the strain of the day. So, I've been smoking this strain called Garlic Mints, which is, like, the stupidest name to me. Like, if I understand it's a cross between two strains before people think I'm stupid, but, like, if you wanted a mint, you would not want it to be garlic. So, Garlic Mints, like, doesn't make sense to me. Anyways, it's very skunky. It's very good. I give it a personal 8 out of 10 leaves, and I've also been smoking live resin on top, which I've been enjoying. I love a good concentrate, and I also have my glass of Pinot Grigio, so go get your bowl, go get your bong, go get your rolling papers, go get whatever you want to smoke out of. Go get whatever your favorite cocktail or drink is, and let's relax, chill, and get into the case of the murders of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman. So I'm going to give a slight overview of this case before I absolutely dive into it, because like I said, it isn't as simple as just a murder case. It stood for a lot at the time, and what was going on with the LA police and the harassment of Black Americans. And so, yeah, so we're going to just start with the end and then we'll dive into the details. So O.J. Simpson gets dragged in by police, right? And he's questioned. And he doesn't do well, I'll just say that for now. So he gets formally charged with the murders of Nicole Brown Simpson, his estranged wife, and Ron Goldman. They found a bloodstained glove on OJ's property. That won't be the only blood evidence they find. He didn't turn himself in when he agreed he would. He fled. There was also the famous chase in his white Bronco. We're going to get into the details of all of that, but this all happens before he actually gets taken in. That pursuit was one of the most popular things ever on television with 95 million viewers. I was personally 5 years old. I remember this case because I was five when he got arrested, but it went on for a while and my mom was really into it. So I remember this case and her just being so upset because she thought, just like I do, the wrong verdict was handed down. So he's arrested after this high-speed chase. So let me introduce you to the team of lawyers. You'll probably recognize Robert Kardashian, the Kardashians' father. Khloe got brought up in the intro. Maybe Chris was getting a little D on the side. So from OJ, we don't know. So it had Johnny Cochran. So he'll be famous, and we'll get into Johnny Cochran alone specifically. It also had F. Lee Bailey, Alan Dershowitz, Sean Holly, Carly Douglas, and Gerald Yulman. So that was the team that OJ put together. So now I'm going to tell you why the trial was so significant, and then we're going to get into the actual trial. The trial is significant because of the verdict. So this trial was highly publicized and televised. So the nation did have opinions on it. They have been watching it, and everybody was watching it at that time. It was all anybody could talk about. You know, OJ was this huge football player and actor, and now he's being blamed for murdering his estranged wife and one of her friends. So the whole nation is watching it. But as I said, Rodney King had happened, and there was already a lot of tension between the black community and the white community. So the verdict became known as a racial gap because they took a poll of Los Angeles, and it showed that most residents that were African American felt that justice had been served with a not guilty verdict. But the majority of white people and Latinos felt it was racially motivated jury nullification. And it was an almost all African American jury. So they repolled people in 2013, and the gap has since closed a lot. A lot of people believe that OJ is guilty now, but like I said, tensions were high then. Like, we've experienced that recently here in America, because unfortunately the police cannot leave our young black community alone. So that's why, and this trial became very observed and important because of these reasons. Okay, so let's get into the background. So I told you that Nicole Brown and O.J. Simpson, Nicole was his estranged wife. So they meet in 1977. She was 18 and she was working at a private club in Beverly Hills. She was absolutely beautiful. I will tell you that. Nicole was a freaking hottie, hot. She was beautiful. People say great things about her, too, and how giving she was. So she was beautiful inside and out. They began dating, even though Simpson was already married. So I'm going to hold judgment on this because Nicole suffered a fate worse than anybody deserves. Should you be having sex with somebody that is married? No. Always no. The answer to that is always no. But Nicole went, like I said, got a fate worse than anybody deserves, so we're not judging her for this. But in general, my girl rule is you do not have sex with married men. Okay. So this leads to OJ to filing for divorce from his first wife in 79. So they met in 77. 2 years later, he files for divorce. He married Nicole on February 2nd, 1985. And they went on to have two children, which is very unfortunate. Because, as I said in the intro, everybody knows OJ was found not guilty of this. So, who do you think got the kids after their mother was brutally murdered? So sad. So, there was a lot of documented domestic abuse where Simpson would beat Nicole. There are pictures of her face all bruised, the cops had, because he was extremely physically abusive. Nicole, when she signed the prenuptial agreement, agreed to not work while they were married, which is a crazy thing to have in the prenup. Like, can we talk about that? That is abusive alone. Why can't a woman work? Like, if she wants to work even though you're rich, let her work. Don't be a douche. Like, I mean, OJ is a douche for many other reasons, but that's extremely douchey, bro. And if you're thinking about doing that to somebody, don't. Let them work. Women deserve a career, too. I'm always on the side of girl power. But when you think about this, it made it impossible for her to leave. Because what was she going to do? She had signed a prenup saying she wouldn't work, so she could not work. And she was financially dependent on OJ. So, in an incident, Simpson actually broke Nicole's arm. So, OJ breaks her arm. And she said she had fallen off her bike because she didn't want OJ to get arrested. He beat her in public. He beat her during sex. He beat her in front of family and friends. There were 62 incidents of abuse, and the police were notified 8 times. Of these 8 times that the police were notified, O.J. Simpson was arrested once. Nicole finally files for divorce in 1992, February 25th, 1992, because she can't take the physical abuse anymore, and she cites and irreconcilable differences. Oh my god, that was terrible. So Nicole went on to say that OJ started stalking her and harassing her and intimidating her because he wanted her to return. This is common in abusers, so that doesn't shock me. And as I said before, the juice is a douche. F the juice is loose, it should be the juice is a douche. A douche canoe, if you will. But just douche was more, rolled off the tongue better. So she starts documenting this. And she documents a time where he was spying on her while she was having sex with her new boyfriend. Talk about awkward. So fucking awkward. So Nicole started to feel that her life was in danger, wouldn't you? He was abusive, he was stalking her, he was spying on her during her intimate moments with her new boyfriend, who wasn't a douche. Like, yeah, I think any woman would be scared for their life in that situation, or man, if they were experiencing it for that matter. And OJ had threatened to kill her if he found her with another man. She also made a will at this time. That is how scared she was. This young woman made a will because she was so convinced her husband would kill her. She knew, and nobody did anything. Because in America, fame does a lot for you. I mean, just look at the Me Too movement. It took forever for those girls to come forward. I'm happy things are changing. People can complain about it all they want and say everybody's too politically correct now, but I'm all about women not being abused sexually, physically, anything anymore by men in power. So, like I said before, girl power, I feel like Baby Spice. When I was little, I always wanted to be Baby Spice, and I have brown hair, so I would make my friends let me be Baby Spice, even though I look the furthest from Baby Spice of all of them. And I would play with my cousin, and her name is Abby, and she used to tell me she had to be Baby Spice because if you switch the letters in her name around, it's Baby. So, yeah, that's just a fun little story I thought I'd share. We'll get back to OJ. I'm sorry. So, Nicole calls a women's shelter on June 8th, 1994. She was so scared that she was considering staying there because she knew that OJ wanted to kill her and that he was crazy and had beat her, and she knew what he was capable of. And he was pleading for them to get back together, and Nicole kept saying no. And I don't blame her. And so she was scared. She contacts the shelter, and she's thinking about staying there. So, a few months before the murders, O.J. Simpson was filming a pilot called Frogmen. It was an adventure series like the A-Team, and he played the lead role of Bullfrog Burke, and he was a Navy SEAL, and he got military training for this, which included using a knife. This will be important for later. So, in Frogman, he holds the knife to a woman's throat, which will also be important later. There was a 25-minute tape of the pilot that didn't include the knife scene that was found by investigators and watched in Simpson's house. And so, yeah. So now let's get into the murders before we get into the actual trial because obviously he has to be arrested for them before we can get into the trial. So, on June 12th, 1994, Nicole and Orenthal James Simpson, aka OJ, aka Juice the Douche, attended their daughter Sydney's dance recital. Afterwards, Nicole went with her family out to eat at Mezzaluna restaurant. Of course, she didn't invite OJ to go with her. Why would she? He makes me cringe. I pray for Khloe Kardashian. That is not the father. That is not the father. You are not the father, OJ. I am Maury, and I am saying you are not the father. All right. Anyways, I need to stop being so weird. So it ends up a waiter at the restaurant is Ron Goldman, and he was close friends with Nicole, and for the past few weeks they had been hanging out, but he wasn't even waiting on their table. So Nicole brings the kids to Ben and Jerry's. I love Ben and Jerry's. Give me a pint of half-baked or the Tonight Dough or Americone Dream and I will eat it. I will eat it all and not feel any shame. So they went to Ben and Jerry's and then returned to Nicole's condo. The manager of Mezzaluna said that Nicole's mom called at 9:37 because she lost her eyeglasses. The manager found them and put them in an envelope, and Ron Goldman, being friends with Nicole, offered to take the sunglasses over to her at 9:50. Now, this will be the worst choice Ron Goldman has made. It was him being nice, and this decision will unfortunately end his life. So, OJ, since he wasn't invited, he ate McDonald's with one of his friends who was like a small-time actor and a family friend. His name is Cato Kalin. And he lived in the guest house on Juice the Douche's estate. So, rumors start circulating that after the fact this happened that they had actually gone to Burger King, not McDonald's, and saw a drug dealer and bought crystal meth. I don't know if that's true. I wouldn't be surprised. OJ seems like the type that would do that, but I don't know. I don't know if that's true. So at 10:15, Nicole Brown's neighbors start calling the cops, and they will testify that they heard nonstop barking coming from outside of the house. It started at 10:15. At 10:55 p.m., somebody was walking dogs for families who lived in Nicole Brown's neighborhood, and they lived a few blocks away. He came to Nicole's house. He was across the street from Nicole's house. And Nicole's Akito was barking in the street outside of her house. The Akito was covered in blood, and he followed the man. So the man tries to bring him back to where he found it, but the dog is resisting. He left the Akita with a neighborhood couple who said they would keep the dog overnight because it was agitated. So the couple decided to walk it back to where it had been found. At midnight, as they reached the area where the Akita had been found, the dog insisted on stopping outside of Nicole's house. And this led to the couple seeing Nicole Brown Simpson's body lying outside the house, and so police were called, and then they found Ron Goldman's body near Nicole's. So, can we just talk about how awesome dogs are for a second? I love my dogs. You think a cat would save somebody like that? Nah, they would eat you. But this Akita brought somebody there and was like, "Yo, my owner is hurt. Help her out." Dogs are awesome. I have three, and I talk about them often. I have Penny Lane, Carter, and Jackson, and they are my world. Okay. And I'm not a cat person. I'm sorry, cat people, but your cat would not go get a neighbor if somebody killed you. They would eat you, though. So, they can be friends with Jeffrey Dahmer. Okay. So, Nicole's front door was open when the bodies were found, but there was no signs that anybody had been in it. Nicole's body was face down and barefoot at the bottom of her stairs that led to her door. The whole entire walkway looked like a bomb went off. It was just covered in blood. It looked like a horror movie. It was terrible. I'm not even exaggerating. Like, there was just so much blood. The stairs were covered in blood, but interestingly, with all this blood everywhere, Nicole Brown's feet were absolutely clean. So, she must have been killed first, the police figured, because she hadn't walked through the blood. So, that is why her feet stayed clean. She had been stabbed multiple times in her head. Think about that. Think about how hard your skull is. Yes, I just hit myself in the head while I was doing that. But think about how hard your skull is. Somebody stabbed her in the head multiple times. Think about how angry you have to be to stab somebody in the freaking head multiple times. Like, what? And her neck. And there were defensive wounds on her hands, which are common with victims of stabbings. They often try to defend themselves with their hands, and their hands get cut. So this meant she fought back, but it only lasted a short time. Like, she did not last very long, unfortunately. And because I believe OJ is guilty, if you look at OJ, you would know why. He was huge back then. I mean, he was in shape. He was a football player. Well, he was retired then, but he was a football player. And he's a big guy. And this poor woman and her friend, who wasn't anything more than a friend, lost their lives in the most gory, catastrophic way I could imagine. It's just too terrible. And imagine being the two kids who had to live with this, and I wonder if they think their dad is guilty. I'm honestly curious because a lot of evidence does point to that. And, like I said, the verdict at the time was huge because of the racial divide, but now people that said he wasn't guilty think he was. So I wonder if the kids think he's guilty. I definitely do. I will always say that. So, the wound that actually killed her severed her carotid artery. So that's why a lot of blood. There was a large bruise in the center of her upper back, which meant to the investigators that after Ron was murdered, whoever had killed her had returned to her body and stood on her back to then pull her hair back and slit her throat. It was so. Why? Okay, trigger warning. This is a really gross description, but you need to understand the hate that had to go behind this because it's intense. Like, what happened to her is, I just hope she's resting in peace. So you could see her larynx through the wound in her neck and her vertebrae C3, so that means your back, so all the way through your neck to your back had a chip in it. So the knife went all the way through her neck. You could see her larynx, cut her artery, and hit her backbone. Her head was barely attached to her body by the time police found it. Ron Goldman's mutilated corpse was not far away. It was close to a tree and a fence. He had been stabbed many times in the body and neck, but there weren't many defensive wounds on his hands, so this also means a short struggle, just like with Nicole. So whoever murdered them was able to do it quickly and subdue them both, which leads me to believe that OJ wasn't alone. So, yes, I do think OJ is guilty, but I think there's another party involved that I will bring up, not probably in this part, but in the next part, or whenever we get to the verdict and trial, or maybe after the trial. I don't really know. I gotta see where it's gonna fit, but just know since both of them barely had any defensive wounds, I think two people were involved in it because how could he have subdued both of them? He was big, but like Ron could have ran if it was just him. So the LA County coroner got forensic evidence and said that Ron was stabbed from behind while he was held in a chokehold. There was a blue neck cap and a left hand extra large Aris Isotoner light leather glove. This glove will be so important. I cannot stress the importance of the glove. Remember this glove because it will be burned in your memory forever if you do not know this case well. And an envelope containing the glasses that had been lost. There was a trail of bloody shoe prints to the back gate. And to the left of those prints were drops of blood from the assailant. And he had injured his left hand. This is also very important. So the assailant had injured his left hand, left drops of blood. But remember the injured hand. So the distance between the prints indicated to investigators that whoever did it walked away rather than running. So if it was a burglar or somebody like that, they would have ran. I don't care what anybody says, they would have ran. So now we're going to get into the sketchy flight to Chicago that Orenthal James Juice the Douche Simpson took the night of the murders, supposedly. The night of June 12th, OJ was scheduled to board a red-eye flight. He was going from LA to Chicago. He was going to play golf at a convention, and he was a representative of the Hertz Rental Car Corporation, so it was their golf tournament, and that's what he was going to play in. So this flight is due to leave at 11:45. So a limo was coming to pick OJ up around 10:25. So remember, guys, this is pre-9/11, so it didn't take 3 hours to get through security. Like, you could show up right before your flight. People without boarding passes could walk you to your gate to say goodbye. It was a different world. So the limo driver goes to the house to pick him up. He buzzes the intercom at 10:40 because nobody had come out and he's not getting a response. He says the house was dark and that nobody appeared to be home. So he smoked a cigarette and made several calls to his boss to get OJ's home phone number. He then went on to say at court at one point he saw a figure the same size as OJ enter the house through the front door from where the driveway starts, and the lights still were not on. He did not see which direction the figure came from. He also said in court he saw OJ's house number on the curb outside of the estate, but there was no cars parked outside. So the prosecution uses this because OJ's Ford Bronco was found next to the house numbers on the curb in the morning. So the limo driver would have noticed the Bronco is what they're saying if OJ was there when he went to pick him up. The Bronco will also become very important. You can't make this stuff up. So the limo driver witnessed the shadowy figure and he heads for the south walkway, where the bloody glove that I told you about that was really important would be later found by Cato Kalin. And he was having a telephone conversation with a friend. Cato Kalin, not the limo driver. At 10:40, there was a crash, a boom. Sorry. So there's a crash into the wall of the guest house and Kalin is staying in there. He says he hears three thumps, so thump, thump, thump. And he thought it was an earthquake, which is kind of common in California. But I don't know if thumps would make me think earthquake. Kalin hangs up the phone and goes outside to investigate. But he doesn't go directly down the pathway from where he heard the thumps. He walks to the front of the property where he sees the limo. Kalin let the limo in, and OJ, Orenthal James Douche Simpson, finally comes out through the front door a few minutes later, claiming he had overslept. Both the limo driver and Cato Kalin would say that OJ seemed very agitated that night. The limo driver noted that on the way to the airport, OJ complained about how hot it was and how he was sweating, and he rolled down the window. But it was a cold night. It was chilly, said the driver, so he thought that was weird. The driver also went on to testify that he put 4 bags of luggage into the car, and one was a book bag, and OJ would not let him touch it. He insisted that he put it in the car himself. And at the airport, a porter went on to testify that OJ only checked 3 bags that night. So, 4 bags, one that Juice the Douche wouldn't let the limo driver touch. Clearly sketchy. Everybody, I always say this, your alarm bells should be sounding, your creeper alarm bells, your murderer alarm bells should be sounding. What the fuck happened to this bag, people? And why couldn't anybody touch it? That's all I'm saying. And like I said, it's pre-9/11, so things are different at airports. It's not the same. Police determined that the missing luggage was the same backpack that the limo driver had mentioned, obviously. Another witness, who didn't get to testify at the trial, but he was a witness, claimed he saw Simpson at the airport discarding items from a bag into a trash can. Creeper alarm, creeper alarm, creeper alarm, murder alarm, all that. So, he's late for his flight. He says he overslept, but the driver swears his car wasn't there and he wasn't home. He goes to the airport with four bags and only checks three and is seen throwing stuff into a trash can. Could you be more sketchy and obvious? Like, what the crap? You might as well have worn a sign that said, I murdered my ex-wife and you guys are gonna find out about it soon. Like, what the hell? What a sketch bag. Anyway, so two detectives go on to believe, they're named Tom Lang and Philip Vinatter. They go on to believe that that is how the murder weapon, shoes, and clothes were gone. OJ had disposed of them in that backpack in the airport, and that's why he wouldn't let the limo driver touch it. Simpson was late, but he did catch his flight. He said that, like I said, he said he overslept, blah, blah, blah. So, a passenger on the plane said that he didn't notice any cuts or wounds on OJ's hands. I am sorry, I have flown many times, and I could not testify to whether anybody had cuts or wounds on their hands. What the hell? This person was just staring at OJ's hands? Like, what? No way. Garbage. Garbage person and garbage testifying. A broken glass and blood on the bed sheets were discovered at OJ's hotel room. He stayed at the O'Hare Plaza Hotel. The manager of the hotel recalled Simpson asking for a Band-Aid for his finger. Now, the reason that this is important, and I told you to store it in your big brains earlier, is because, as we said, the assailant of whoever murdered poor Nicole and Ron cut their left hand. So now OJ has blood on his sheets, he broke a glass, and has a perfect way to explain how his left hand got injured. So, yeah, keep that in mind, because that is like the 30th thing that should be said in those murderer alarm bells off. Murderer, 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 creeper, douchebag, all those alarms need to be ringing heavy right now, because that is crazy. He is, like, all of that, it's circumstantial, I understand that, but it is strong circumstantial evidence. The fact that he wasn't home and has nobody to confirm his alibi that he overslept, very strong in my opinion. All right, we're gonna stop there. We'll get back into it with part two. This is probably gonna be three parts, if I have to guess. All right, guys, thanks for listening as always. Like and share, subscribe, tell your friends if they dig weed and they dig chill times talking about true crime, they should check us out and join the community. Love you guys. See you for part two.